views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Moms, are you ready to become enlightened, empowered, and stress-free? Well, get ready because you are about to tune into vibrant, powerful moms helping everyday women create an extraordinary life with Debbie Pokornik. Each week, Debbie discusses topics to help you become self-aware, inspired, and on track to create the life you crave. It's time to stop settling and start thriving. And it all begins now on Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Vibrant Powerful Mom Show. I'm your host, Debbie Pokornik, and my mission is to help you create a life you love at work, at home, and at play. So we've been reading my book, Break Free of Parenting Pressures, and we started it back in June 2019, and at the beginning of August, we got into part three, which is all about your parenting pack. So today, we're going to be starting right in the middle of chapter 10, and if you're just tuning in and you prefer to, you know, start at the beginning, head back to the beginning of June, or if you find it hard to follow, check out the beginning of August is when we started doing the parenting pack, and or even just the last episode when I started chapter 10 would be just fine. Whatever you decide, I hope you enjoy the show. And if it doesn't feel like this content is applicable in your life, I hope you'll return in the fall when I'll switch back to my regular format of interviews and other timely material. Break free of parenting pressures. Embrace your natural guidance. Chapter 10. The battle for bedtime. Putting young kids to bed when they don't feel ready can be challenging. The interruptions by the child as she needs a drink of water, one extra hug, daddy to lie beside her, or one more story can leave the parent more exhausted than if he'd let her stay up in the first place. If you have more than one young child going to bed and separate bedrooms, it's even harder. Part of the problem is that bedtime is one of those areas our children ultimately have the upper hand in. We cannot force them to go to sleep. Our kids cannot force themselves to sleep either, but they can work hard to keep themselves awake. What time our child falls asleep is not something we get to decide. What time they go to their bedroom is. The trick is to get our kids self-monitoring so they recognize when they're tired and need sleep. Eliminating the power struggles that can occur in this area is a much nicer way to end the day. One way to do this is to develop clear boundaries for our kids and then allow them freedom to work within those boundaries. You can start using this idea as soon as your child moves out of a crib and understands the idea that he must stay in his bedroom. This process will not work with an overtired child as his reasoning is off, but other times it can be very effective. It begins by setting up a bedtime routine for the child and then keeping to it as best we can. By doing this, we are helping our child cue their body and create a habit that will help sleep come easier. So a sample routine for an 8 p.m. bedtime might be at 7:30, kids put on pajamas, light healthy snack, brush teeth, read story, hugs, and kisses. Choose what time you want your child to be in her bedroom and then begin your routine in advance of that time, if possible. Once your routine is completed, let the child do whatever she needs to do quietly to get herself ready for sleep. In other words, rather than insisting lights be out and she lie in bed staring at the ceiling, allow her to do something quietly in her room until she feels ready to sleep. Examples of quiet activities might be reading, drawing, some floor games like cars or dolls or stuffies, puzzles, some crafts that don't require washing up after, soft music, and so on. Your child needs to know the options in advance and, whenever possible, help you to create the list of what's allowed. If her activity becomes noisy, a knock on the door or a verbal reminder should be all that is required to quiet her down. If she continues to be noisy, use a stronger reminder. Can you make this activity work quietly for bedtime, or do you need to put it away? If it gets loud again, the activity is gone and can be discussed in the morning, but not that night. In my house, this would mean the child had not cooperated with the bedtime rules and would now need to lie in bed until she could drift off to sleep. This type of interruption usually happens only once or twice. Once she understands you are serious about the rules, she doesn't want to risk losing her bedtime freedom. It can be a bit more complicated when kids share a room and one wants to sleep while the other wants to play. This requires a bit more creativity on our part, but is still workable. Allowing the awake child to play on the far side of her bed, giving her a reading light, making a blanket fort, or putting in a cheap little tent to play in are just a few of the options that can be put in place. If they both or all stay awake, their energy can feed off one another, so be very clear and consistent with follow-through for noise. The following are some sample rules and critical points to help keep this bedtime routine on track. First, the child may come out of her room only to use the bathroom. Second, the child may not call the parent to her bedroom unless something really unusual has occurred. I used to allow my kids one call to me and would respond with, "Is this the one important time you need me to come to your room?" Third, if a child stays up late and then struggles with getting up on time the next morning, she will need to go into her bedroom a half hour earlier the next evening. Fourth, have a discussion about bedtime rules ahead of time with very clear expectations outlined. It might take work to be clear on what is acceptable, but that will make things go much more smoothly. And finally, expect a child who has been fighting with you at bedtime to really test for consistency. She will be looking for the loopholes that will make you engage in a power struggle. You know your child better than anyone else, so be sure to take her tendencies into account when choosing the time to set. Make it work for both of you. This routine can help our kids learn to self-monitor and help us avoid power struggles at bedtime. It is critical we stay calm throughout the process and be consistent with our rules. Role model your own self-awareness to your child. "Boy, I'm really tired tonight. I think I'll go to bed early." And avoid nagging or blaming. The idea for this bedtime routine came to me because I can lie in bed for hours staring at the ceiling, just wishing sleep would come. It can be very uncomfortable and makes me, an in-control adult, want to cry out in frustration. Most sleep programs will tell you that if you can't sleep, get up and do something to empty your brain and allow your body to shut down and get ready to sleep. Having our kids fall asleep easily isn't about our convenience. By teaching them how to prepare for rest, like having a before-bed routine, how to unwind, maybe by doing quiet activities, and how to self-monitor, recognize when they're tired, we are creating bedtimes that can be pleasant for everyone. Free parenting tip: providing our kids with a bedtime routine that allows them to self-monitor and sleep when they are ready cuts down on power struggles and other issues. Taking tantrums off the menu. Mealtimes are often challenging for parents of young children. What's supposed to be a time of connecting and sharing becomes a time of tears and arguments instead. It is a common time for power struggles, as the parent wants to call all the shots and say what the child should eat or that the child should eat, and the child subconsciously recognizes this is an area he can control. This chapter provides ideas to make mealtimes more enjoyable and less battle-prone for families that find this an issue. Barbara Coloroso's book, Kids Are Worth It, provides plenty of ideas to help remove the emotion from the dining experience and replace it with positive connection and self-awareness. When my kids were young, I took these ideas, adapted them to fit my family, and had a much happier mealtime experience as a result. One way to make sure mealtimes are pleasant experiences is to allow your child to help choose the meal. Set some healthy boundaries and then allow them to choose. Do you want chicken or hamburger tonight? If he can't or won't decide, do not stress over it. Simply change to something like, I'm going to choose chicken for tonight. Do you want the carrots cooked or raw? You don't have to let the child choose the whole meal, but the more you include him, the greater the chance that he will decide to eat it. Let your child choose how much food is put on his plate. Often, the adults at the table will ladle out the portions for everyone. This can be the cause of many problems. We can't possibly know how hungry our kids are or even how much they like that food. By having our child determine how much he wants, we're teaching him to tune in to his body and monitor how he feels. Since he is just starting to learn how portions work, there are a few things you should keep in mind so we can make it a positive experience for everyone. One, if the child really likes to scoop, he might take more than he can eat. In that case, limit the amount to one scoop and let him know he may have another when he's finished his first. If he really likes scooping, perhaps you can let him scoop out some for the adults in the house or any other agreeable children. Two, if the child loves the meal and would empty the pan without thought of what others will eat, a limit must be set. This is a good opportunity to teach your child about sharing and being polite by being clear on the number of pieces each has to start. Three, when the child wants only two peas but half the tray of French fries, problems could arise. When this happens, you might teach him about nutritional balance by saying something like, one scoop of peas balances one scoop of French fries. If he really doesn't like peas, you might ask what vegetable he would prefer to balance out his fries. If he chooses another, have him go to the fridge if he is able and get the new food rather than interrupting your meal for his special extras. Four, in some cases, you might want to have a rule like everyone needs to try a little bit of everything. I tell my kids that you never know when your taste buds are going to change. What a shame it would be to live half your life thinking you hate something, only to find out later your tastes have changed. Our children's palates are forming as they grow. The more variety we offer, the more chance they have of developing a wide range of taste. Five, when having a meal that you know your child will try one bite of and then refuse to eat, it's a good idea to have a backup plan. One way to deal with this is by telling your child he can get himself something else to eat, providing it is healthy. But make sure you discuss food qualifications for this rule before you put it in place. Since you've already created a meal, your child should make this one on his own and clean up whatever mess he makes while getting it. When my kids were young, they would choose something like fruit and yogurt that didn't require any cooking. Alternatively, he could wait until you finished eating for help with cooking something. Six, if your child scoops his own food and then chooses not to eat it all, you need a clear and consistent rule about what will happen. For example, you might say, if you don't want to eat what you've put on your plate, you may wrap it up. If you're hungry between now and bed, you may eat that first before having anything else. This provides him with a variety of options. He might go to bed without eating what was on his plate or anything else. He might head back to his plate later when he is really hungry and devour it. He might return and eat part of his food. You decide if there will be any flexibility in your rule. If he was warned that he was taking too much, then your rule might be unbending. If he made a good effort but simply misjudged how filling the meal would be, you might decide to let it go as a learning experience. Self-awareness is a critical piece of healthy living and is an important skill for our children to have. As our kids learn to think about their meals, they become better able to judge when and what to eat. Mealtime should not be about tears and arguments. The more we allow our children to listen to their body's messages and respect what they hear, the more we allow our mealtimes to become a time of positive sharing and connection. Free parenting tip: mealtimes can be a source of stress for families. The more we allow our kids to make decisions based on their own self-awareness, the more we reduce mealtime stress and increase family togetherness. Chapter 11, Are We Communicating? My Do-Over Option. Over the years, I have learned quite a variety of parenting techniques, especially around communication skills. I teach on these topics often and do my best to practice what I preach. Despite this, I definitely have moments when I do not use my skills properly. I might give a rude or snappy reply, or maybe behave in a way that makes a situation worse than it needed to be. Sometimes I even recognize what I'm doing and I still continue doing it. I'm not sure why I do this, but I have figured out that I am not the only one who does it. In fact, I find parents are often relieved to hear that I do it too. This got me thinking about my kids and how they sometimes make a rude statement or use a tone of voice that communicates disrespect or snub me with a look. I decided if I can know all that I teach and still choose to behave poorly, perhaps I need to cut them some slack and provide them opportunities to practice positive behavior before pulling out a consequence. As a result, I came up with the idea to offer my kids an opportunity to rewind and try a second time when their words, look, or tone of voice were leading them into trouble. The way this works is if my kids speak in a disrespectful or irritating way, like whining, I ask them if they'd like to try that again. I'm careful to say this in a non-judgmental voice, which can be really hard to do when my child just suggested that I'm the stupidest person alive. But I do that to ensure my offer doesn't come across as a threat. The purpose of doing this is to give my kids a chance to practice their skills and make them super aware of what disrespect looks and sounds like. If they continue being disrespectful, consequences are put in place. So here are some examples of how it works. A child says, "Mom, where's my backpack?" Mom says, "I don't know. I never used it. Where did you last have it?" The child responds in a sneering voice, "If I knew that, I wouldn't be asking." Mom says, "Would you like to try that again?" Child says in a nicer voice, "I don't know where my backpack is. That's why I'm asking." Mom says, "I haven't seen it, but you might check the back closet." In this situation, my child self-corrected immediately, and we carried on as if the sneering voice hadn't happened. Here's another example. The child makes a disgusted face. "Chicken again? I hate chicken." Mom says, "Would you like to try that again?" Child says, "I think I've had enough chicken. I'll make something else to eat." Mom says, "That's fine." It is tempting in this situation to add on a lecture about how difficult it is to come up with supper ideas and about appreciating my effort, but if I did that, it would defeat the purpose. One more example. Mom says, "Time to turn off the computer. Why don't you go outside for a while?" Child responds, "I don't want to go outside. It's hot out there. Why do I have to turn off the computer?" Mom says, "I can't hear whining. Do you want to try that again?" The child says loudly, "I don't want to go outside. It's hot." Mom says, "I could certainly hear that, but it didn't feel any better. Computer is off for the afternoon. If you want to stay inside, you can empty the dishwasher." In this case, my child did not correct his behavior, but simply changed it to another undesirable response. As a result, he got a minor consequence and a choice. If he still didn't correct his behavior, he might have an additional consequence added in, like perhaps a computer gone for the rest of the day and required to empty the dishwasher. Disrespect is not always easy to identify when you are the one being disrespectful. Sometimes you are simply letting your feelings show and are not aware those feelings are surfacing in such a rude way. I believe we can all use a do-over once in a while. Our kids need to test our boundaries, especially as they get older, and they require lots of opportunities to practice their self-control. This little trick saves me from a lot of unnecessary battles and allows my children plenty of opportunity to practice their skills. What did you call me? Name calling is a common occurrence with children, whether they have siblings or not. Some of it is in good fun and some is downright hurtful. I think it is important we raise our kids to understand they are resilient enough to deal with name calling, while at the same time, partly for our own sanity, have a way to discourage this troublesome behavior. If you're not bothered by your children calling each other names, then you need not do anything about it. Before writing it off entirely, however, let me caution you about one thing. There is a difference between teasing and hurtful put-downs. The first is meant to be fun. Done properly, it actually builds the relationship between those involved, as it usually makes them laugh and creates a positive connection. It is not meant to hurt, and when the person being teased gets upset, the teaser apologizes, or at least stops the teasing. Perhaps the most important quality of this kind of teasing is that the comments can go both ways, with the role of teaser and teasee shifting between those involved. Insults, on the other hand, are meant to put a person down and are a different story altogether. They are meant to hurt and are often aimed at something a person is sensitive about. The teaser does not stop when their target becomes upset, but actually increases the taunts. There is usually a power imbalance, whether it be age, size, authority, which results in the insults flowing in one direction as the person being teased believes he will be hurt worse if he tries to give it back. This type of teasing can be done openly or secretly, and once it starts, will often get worse without adult intervention. This can be a first step towards bullying and is worth doing something about. Even when it's not headed for bullying, it can be hard on the self-esteem and can cause major lifetime rifts in the relationship. Despite this, kids are extremely resilient and should be taught how to stand up for themselves rather than rescued from most situations. Sympathy for a person who is feeling victimized is not useful. We help our kids by providing them with skills, not by rescuing. My goal was to teach my kids how to joke with each other without truly hurting. It's not that I didn't feel my kids were strong enough to handle the hurt, but more that I wanted them to be building a relationship that would stick with them throughout their lives. The fact that I dislike listening to bickering and arguing provided an extra incentive to come up with a plan for dealing with name-calling. So my name-calling rule: if you call someone a name, as in insults, put-downs, etc., you must say two nice things about that person to help build him or her back up. This rule was put in force when my children were very young, about 3 years old, and applied to every one of us. Terms of endearment, like sweetie and honey bunch, were okay as long as the person being called those names was okay with it. To make the rule easier, anytime a person was called something other than his or her name, a foul could be called. At first, it shocked me when I was called to task for affectionately calling my son a turkey. Then I realized that if it offended him, I needed to know about it. If a person was called something and requested two nice things, the rule was in effect: no questions asked. Other people could also call for two nice things if they witnessed a name calling, but in the end, it was up to the target to determine if a buildup was required. If a person refused to say two nice things or argued that no offense had occurred, "I was only joking, that's not name calling," the number increased to 4. If he continued to resist, the number went to 6, and he was sent away from the group to come up with his compliments. He could return when he had come up with his 6 compliments and was ready to share them. If the name calling occurred in front of others, the compliments were done that way as well. This decreased any desire to call a sibling a name to look cool in front of friends and then tell her in private that she really is great and he likes being around her. When my kids were young and just learning this rule, I would offer to help them come up with the compliments. I did this both so that I could model what a good compliment sounded like and because sometimes it is hard to think of nice, original things to say. To cut down on repeat offenses, we insisted that you could not use the same compliment twice in one day, and things like sorry or I love you did not qualify as compliments. Some sample compliments are things like, you're fun to play with, you make great Lego creations, you make wonderful forts, you tell great stories, you're very creative, I like being around you, you're nice, you're very patient, you give great hugs, you're funny, you're a good cook, you're helpful. Of course, the compliments would change with age, but in our house, I found it was the insults that seemed to completely disappear. What did you call me is something I rarely hear in my house today, and for the most part, name-calling really is in good fun. Free parenting tip, a good, clear rule telling our kids they must say two nice things about anyone they decide to call a name can decrease insults and build self-esteem. So that's it for today. With much respect for you and the journey you are on, this is Debbie Pokornik wishing you a vibrant and powerful day.
You've been listening to Vibrant Powerful Moms with host Debbie Pokornik. If you enjoyed this show, please give us a shout out and let us know what you loved. Visit vibrantpowerfulmoms.com to find out more about Debbie and her sisterhood of Vibrant Powerful Moms.